This week, we take a look at the work of four men who are, of course, best known to the public as gifted songwriters. Irving Berlin, Buddy De Silva, Richard Rodgers, and Oscar Hammerstein. What is perhaps not so well known is that all four also made considerable impact as producers of shows in the American theater. Let's start with Buddy De Silva, the least known name, despite having had credit for a vast number of song hits. Well, try these on for size. I'll Build a Stairway to Paradise, California, Here I Come, Somebody Loves Me, The Best Things in Life Are Free. Evergreens, all of them. Of course, no one is born Buddy, even in America, and De Silva started out as George, born in 1895 in New York City. He then soon moved to Los Angeles, where almost instantly he made a name for himself as a child performer. One of the big vaudeville circuits wanted to book his song and dance act, but a disapproving grandfather nipped that in the bud by sending him smartly back to school. College followed, and De Silva's marks must have been diabolical. At night, he was playing ukulele in a phony Hawaiian band, while also churning out song lyrics for Al Jolson and other performers. Next came the fabulous songwriting partnership with Ray Henderson and Lou Brown, resulting in such durable hits as The Birth of the Blues, It All Depends on You, The Varsity Drag, The Black Bottom, Sunny Boy, and Button Up Your Overcoat. Another prolific man of music, Johnny Mercer, said of De Silva, Brown, and Henderson,
"They were good songwriters. They really were. Then they had a publishing company, and they were tremendously successful at both. Buddy wrote with a lot of guys. Before he wrote with Henderson and Brown, he wrote with Kern, he wrote with Gershwin, he wrote with Herbert. He wrote a lot of lyrics. He's got his name on a lot of big songs. They all went into the film world, but Buddy was successful at it. He went to work at Fox producing movies. After they did a couple of movies as writers, Buddy also wrote libretto. So he became a librettist and also a producer. And he produced all the Shirley Temple pictures, and he went on from there to produce musicals at Fox. But he was good."
Yes, De Silva was very good, but as the theater historian Stanley Green says,
"Nobody knew who he was. He didn't feel that anybody would know who a Hollywood producer was. He felt that the only way that he could satisfy his own ego was to go back to Broadway and produce on Broadway. So he did. And he went back in 1939, and he produced a very successful show called Du Barry Was a Lady, with Ethel Merman and Burt Law, with a score by Cole Porter.
De Silva not only produced Du Barry, he also collaborated on the libretto with Herbert Fields. During the out-of-town tryout, De Silva asked Porter to write a song with what he called low-level sentimental appeal. This was not up Porter's alley, so instead he took sentiment and sent it up rotten.
"If you're ever in a jam, here I am.
Oh, yes, sir, here I am.
If you're ever in a mess, S-O-S.
You'll hear our S-O-S.
If you ever feel so happy, land in jail, I'm your bail. It's friendship, friendship, just a perfect friendship. When all the friendships have been forgot,
ours will still be hot. La 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 la.
If you're ever
After Du Barry Was a Lady, which was a resounding success, the team of De Silva, Porter, and Fields got together again to concoct an even bigger hit. Panama Hattie was Ethel Merman's first starring vehicle.
"What say, let's be buddy. What say, let's be pal. What say, keep up each
De Silva's other 1940 presentation was based on his own original story about political corruption in New Orleans, Louisiana. It had an opening few minutes which the noted orchestrator Robert Russell Bennett remembers vividly.
The opening of the show was very cute. It was a picture of a very stunning-looking secretary with a pad in her hand and her boss, apparently. The curtain goes up and he says, "Take a letter. I'm now writing to whom it may concern." He said, "I'm going to produce a play, and I don't want it to resemble any other play, and I'm going to put it in a city that's not to resemble any city, and in a state that's not to resemble any other state. It must not be confused," he said. "So in order to be no confusion at all, we call the city New Orleans, and in order to have no confusion about the state, we call the state Louisiana. And everything will be fine. Yours truly, Sam Leibovitz, of Rafferty, Driscoll, and O'Brien."
Louisiana Purchase. I'll tell you what it means. It means a lot to sell you New Orleans. Come on, come on. And you can go to town way down in New Orleans. Louisiana salesman with nothing in his jeans. That's why he'd like to sell you New Orleans. Come on, come on. And do all the things there are to do in New Orleans. Where does that heat come from?
Three hit musicals in a row gave Buddy De Silva the prestige he wanted. Hollywood besieged him with offers, and he returned in triumph to California to take up the coveted post of production chief at Paramount Pictures. He also co-founded with Johnny Mercer Capitol Records, and until his death in 1950, De Silva was a top man in both the film and recording industries. One of his many film productions was the screen version of Louisiana Purchase, which, like the show, featured this optimistic Irving Berlin song.
It's a lovely day tomorrow. Tomorrow is a lovely day. Come and feast your tear-dimmed eyes on tomorrow's clear blue skies. If today your heart is weary, if every little thing looks gray, just forget your troubles and learn to say, tomorrow is a lovely day.
That song brings us neatly to our next chairman. As nearly everybody must know, Irving Berlin was born Israel Balin in Siberia. After a pogrom, the large Balin family fled to America, and young Izzy was soon selling newspapers on the streets of New York. Next came such jobs as song plugger, singing waiter, and suddenly, songwriter. Thanks to hits like Alexander's Ragtime Band and Let's Do It, the newly named Irving Berlin was internationally known as the King of Ragtime. He presented shows, too, in his own theater, The Music Box. Say It With Music is one of the hit numbers from the first of Berlin's four Music Box reviews. He also presented a review with a curious title, Yip Yip Yap Hank. The show came about through the composer's army service during the First World War. Berlin talks about it himself.
I went to Camp Upton as a private and wasn't very much of a soldier, and they found out that they could do better using me at my job, which was entertainment. And at first I started bringing talent to the camp to entertain the boys, and then I suggested writing a show for them, which I did, and the show was a very big success.
Sure would be dandy if we'd let her make a fee. So don't you linger, here's a ring for your finger. Isn't it a humdinger? Come along and let the wedding chimes bring happy times for Mandy and me.
My only Mandy, what?
Another popular Irving Berlin song in Yip Yip Yap Hank was Oh How I Hate to Get Up in the Morning. The composer himself sang it at every performance, as he did 24 years later when he presented another soldier show. This is the Army.
That's the shortest night I ever spent.
All right, you guys, up and at 'em. Hit the deck. Outside for old call.
Wait till I get out of this army. I'll show that.
I'm going to bust that bugle some morning. To it!
Yeah.
Jaroslow?
Here.
Bush?
Here.
Reeves?
Go.
Simon?
Go.
Berlin? Berlin! Where is that guy?
He said he was tired, Sergeant, and if you wanted him for anything, you could find him in the barracks.
Oh, he did, did he? Let me at him. Come on, Sleeping Beauty. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. I've been a soldier quite a while and I would like to state the life is simply wonderful, the army food is great. I sleep with 97 others in a wooden hut. I love them all, they all love me, it's very lovely, but oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed. For the hardest blow of all is to hear the bugler call. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. Someday I'm going to murder the bugler. Someday they're going to find him dead. I'll amputate his reveille and step upon it heavily and spend the rest of my life in bed.
Oh, how I hate to get up in the morning. Oh, how I'd love to remain in bed. For the heart is so old, it's to hear the bugle call. You gotta get up, you gotta get up, you gotta get up this morning. Someday I'm going to murder the bugler. Someday I'm going to find him there.
And then I'll get that other pup, the guy who wakes the bugler up.
And spend the rest of my life in bed.
We opened at the Broadway Theater in New York on July 4th. 1942, and we wound up in 1946. I spent about 3.5 years with it. We played in America for over a year. Then we went to Hollywood and made a picture of it, and then came overseas and opened at the Palladium here. In America, we earned about $9,800,000. $9,800,000, that's a lot of money.
This is the Army, Mr. Jones. No private rooms or telephones. You have your breakfast in bed before, but you won't have it there anymore. This is the Army, Mr. Green. We like the barracks nice and clean. You had a housemaid to clean your floor, but she won't help you out anymore. Two of the buglers command. They're in the Army and not in a band. This is the Army, Mr. Brown. You and your baby went to town. She had you worried, but this is war, and she won't worry you anymore. This is the Army, Mr. Jones. This is the Army, Mr. Jones. This is the Army, Mr. Green. We like the barracks nice and clean. You had a housemaid to clean your floor, but she won't help you out anymore. Do what the buglers command. They're in the Army and not in the band. This is the Army, Mr. Brown. You and your baby went to town. She had you worried, but this is war, and she won't worry.
Irving Berlin's greatest theatrical success, Annie Get Your Gun, came in 1946, but he didn't produce it. Rodgers and Hammerstein did. Mind you, Berlin wasn't their first choice for the job.
Jerome Kern, the great Jerome Kern, I might say, was supposed to do the songs of the score for Annie Get Your Gun. Died, tragically died, and I was asked to do it. At first I thought I was too tired, and then I felt a little uneasy about trying to step in Jerry Kern's shoes. But I liked the idea of the story, and I wrote it.
And wrote it easily. During the preparation stage of Annie Get Your Gun, its director, Joshua Logan, suggested to Berlin that Ethel Merman and Ray Middleton should have a second act duet. This happened at a meeting held in Oscar Hammerstein's home. After the meeting, Logan arrived at his own home to find the telephone ringing. It was Berlin, who, only 15 minutes after the conversation with Logan, sang him the entire first chorus of the duet he'd just written.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can be, I can be greater. Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I can shoot a partridge with a single cartridge.
I can get a sparrow with a bow and arrow.
I can live on bread and cheese.
And only on that?
Yes.
So can a rat.
Any note you can reach, I can go higher.
I can sing anything higher than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
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 No, you can't.
Cheaper than you.
50 cents?
40 cents.
30 cents?
20 cents.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can say, I can say softer.
I can say anything softer than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
I can drink my liquor faster than a flicker.
I can do it quicker and get even sicker.
I can open any safe
without being caught.
Sure.
That's what I thought, you crook.
Any note you can hold, I can hold longer.
I can hold any note longer than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, no, I can.
Puzzlingly, some critics at the time found Annie Get Your Gun wanting. Louis Cronenberger in the newspaper PM found it
cheerful but far from overpowering. It's a big Broadway show, in all ways professional, in many ways routine.
While John Chapman wrote in the New York Daily News,
it isn't the greatest show in the world.
Then there was Ward Morehouse in the New York Sun.
Ethel Merman often comes stridently to the aid of a sagging book. Irving Berlin's score is not a notable one.
And in the New York Times, Brooks Atkinson called Annie
a large, noisy, lavish, vulgar, commercial musical show with Ethel Merman blaring undistinguished tunes by Irving Berlin.
Amazing. His hit-filled score included I Got the Sun in the Morning, The Girl That I Marry, There's No Business Like Show Business, You Can't Get a Man with a Gun, They Say It's Wonderful, and My Defenses Are Down. And it was at a performance of Irving Berlin's Annie that Richard Rodgers' then-small daughter Mary told her father that she particularly liked the song about the hurricane. When Rodgers said he couldn't remember a song about a hurricane, Mary said, you know, mighty fences are down. Before we continue with the producing career of Rodgers and Hammerstein, let's quickly bring Irving Berlin up to date. These days, he spends a lot of time painting. And as for songwriting, he told a friend recently, you know, from the neck up, I could do another Broadway show, but from the neck down, I'm not so sure. Now back to Rodgers and Hammerstein. Although Annie Get Your Gun was the first musical they presented jointly, each had produced on their own before. In 1933, Oscar Hammerstein had adapted and presented a German operetta for the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. Unfortunately, Ball at the Savoy received a poor press and lasted only 4 months. Richard Rodgers, on the other hand, had a hit the first time he turned producer. In 1941, he and George Abbott got together to present a musical written by the new songwriting team of Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine. It was called Best Foot Forward.
Buckle down, Rimsocky, buckle down. You can win, Rimsocky, if you buckle down. If you break their necks, if you make their tracks, you can break the legs, so buckle down.
Richard Rodgers' name didn't appear on the Best Foot Forward program. At the time, the chronic dissipations of his longtime partner, Lorenz Hart, were making him less and less reliable, and there were rumors along Broadway that he and Rodgers were breaking up. Not wanting to add fuel to the fires, Rodgers let George Abbott have sole producing credit on the show. But a year later, when a new Rodgers and Hart musical hit Broadway, the name Richard Rodgers was right up there on the bills as co-producer with Dwight D. Wyman. The show was a funny and tuneful one about, of all things, the Greek and Amazon War. The star of By Jupiter was a brilliant dancer whose previous Rodgers and Hart show was that skillful integration of ballet and musical comedy, On Your Toes. Here's what Ray Bolger says of By Jupiter.
It was a highly successful show, too.
I don't think it had the score that On Your Toes had, or music even comparable to it, but it was a very funny show, and then it was again integrated. Richard Rodgers is a delightful man, and Larry Hart was one of my dear, dear, dear friends. You know, he wrote great, marvelous, wonderful lyrics and gave you words to say on the stage that were humorous.
I have eyes for you to give you dirty looks. I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with a knife I'm learning to do. And everything I've got belongs to you. I have a powerful anesthesia in my fist. And the perfect wrist to give your neck a twist. There are hammerlock holds, I've mastered a few. And everything I've got belongs to you. Share for share, share alike. You get struck each time I strike. You for me, me for you. I'll give you plenty of nothing. For better but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I've a terrible tongue, a temper for two. Share alike. You get struck each time I strike. You for me, me for you. I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I've a terrible tongue, a temper.
Also associated with By Jupiter was the composer of such classic songs as Body and Soul, I Cover the Waterfront, and from Out of Nowhere, Johnny Green.
I was the music director and conductor of that show. The last show that they wrote together, Rodgers had a lot to do with the production itself, aside from the music, you know. And as we all know, Richard was to become one of the really fine producers that the musical theater has ever known. I think one of the loveliest songs that Dick ever wrote was Nobody's Heart Belongs to Me.
Nobody's heart belongs to me. Hi-ho, who cares? Nobody writes his songs to me. No one belongs to me. That's the least of my cares.
Johnny Green is quite right. By Jupiter was the last show that Rodgers and Hart wrote together, but the following year they rewrote one. A Connecticut Yankee, their musical, based on a story by Mark Twain about a 20th century American at the court of King Arthur, had originally been produced in 1927. 16 years later, they brought it up to date for wartime audiences by making the hero a lieutenant in the U.S. Navy. The old songs held up very nicely, thank you.
Thou swear, thou witty, thou sweet, thou grand, wouldst kiss me pretty, wouldst hold my hand, for thine eyes are cute to what they do to me. Hear me holler, I choose a sweet lollapalooser in thee. I kiss, or it's in a hut for two rooms and kitchen, I'm sure would do. Give me just a pot of, not a lot of land, and the swell, thou witty, thou grand.
On the first night of the Connecticut Yankee revival, Lorenz Hart watched some of the show and then slipped out of the theater. He was found a few days later in a hotel room unconscious and running a very high fever. And 3 days later, he died of pneumonia. With his next partner, Oscar Hammerstein, Rodgers wrote 3 shows, Oklahoma, Carousel, and Allegro, all of which were presented by the Theatre Guild. Then the 2 songwriters went into management. They made this move for 2 reasons. They wanted to present works by other writers, and also they could see the financial as well as the artistic advantages in being the exclusive owners of every musical they wrote together. One of the foremost directors in the Western world, Armenian-born Ruben Mamoulian, who directed both Oklahoma and Carousel for the stage, has something rather interesting to say about Rodgers and Hammerstein.
There is a curious double exposure to some people. You meet a writer that you've read, and then you meet him and you say, how can he be the man who wrote this book? Or you meet another writer and you say, that's it, that's the man who wrote the book. Dick is a good friend of mine, and I've known him for years. It's difficult to imagine when you know Dick personally, or in his office, or functioning in the theater, that he's the man who wrote these heavenly melodies. And I always used to tell him, you know, you have a direct pipeline to heaven, because how did it come? Some direct connection there. There's that dichotomy. Now, with Oscar, he was more or less one. He was a very nice, charming, warm person. At first, I think he had his difficulties with Dick. But subsequently, I think both of them became very strong, rather cagey producers.
They were certainly cagey about the first musical of their own, which they presented. In the late 1940s, Gertrude Lawrence saw the Irene Dunne Rex Harrison film Anna and the King of Siam and immediately saw herself as Anna in a musical version. She secured the rights to the film and to the book by Margaret Landon and took them to Rodgers and Hammerstein, whose work she'd long admired. They admired Gertie too and wanted to write a show for her, but not a musical version of Anna and the King of Siam. In fact, they turned down the idea earlier when Rodgers' wife Dorothy and Hammerstein's wife Dorothy both suggested it. What changed the songwriter's mind was the very thing that first made Gertrude Lawrence shout Eureka, the Rex Harrison, Irene Dunne film. After deciding to do The King and I, Rodgers and Hammerstein considered hiring Rex Harrison to repeat the role of the King, but there were strong doubts about whether he could carry off a musical role. The other actors considered were José Ferrer, Ezio Pinza, MacDonald Carey, and an actor who had last appeared as Curly, the cowboy hero of the first Rodgers and Hammerstein hit, Oklahoma, Alfred Drake.
I know that Dick Rodgers feels that Carousel is the best thing they ever did together. I sometimes feel that perhaps The King and I might be considered Oscar's best work in terms of lyrics and a book and so on, although Carousel, heaven knows, does have a magnificent score. First of all, I think it's a brilliant adaptation, a very difficult adaptation to make. If you remember, it comes from a rather disorganized book. And secondly, I think that some of the lyrics in The King and I show a kind of depth of perception that perhaps do not exist in some of the others.
But despite all this admiration for The King and I, Alfred Drake turned it down. He'd recently had a long run in Kiss Me, Kate, and wanted to do something non-musical for a change. The man who did play the part was then working in New York as a television director. Richard Rodgers relates what happened.
Well, he was sent around to our casting director, and we knew nothing about Ewell at all. As a matter of fact, that day, we had lunch with a man we were very anxious to get for the part. Very pleasant lunch. But he had other commitments, and he was afraid they couldn't be worked out, and we were afraid they couldn't, too. But we paid the check and got in a cab and went down to the Majestic Theater and out into the auditorium. They were ready to begin with the auditions and told us the name of the first man. And out he came with a bald head and sat cross-legged on the floor of the stage. He had a guitar, and he hit the guitar one whack and gave out with this unearthly yell, sang some heathenish sort of thing. And Oscar and I looked at each other and said, well, that's it. And that was Ewell. You didn't have to be awfully smart to know he was great.
Yul Brynner shaved his head for the part of the king, and so it's remained ever since. The role catapulted Brynner to fame, and his performance in the film version of The King and I earned him a small replica of himself called an Oscar. Gertrude Lawrence was delighted when he was cast. She had admired Brynner 5 years earlier in a Chinese musical called Lute Song, and once even sneaked into a radio rehearsal to watch him at work. They certainly had great rapport.
Shall we dance? Shall we then say goodnight and mean goodbye? Or perchance, when the last little star has left the sky, shall we still be together with our arms about each other? And shall you be my new romance? On the clear understanding that this kind of can happen. Shall we dance? Shall we dance? Shall we
The King and I had a Broadway run of 1,246 performances. When The King and I opened on Broadway, the critic of the New York Journal American said of Rodgers' music,
"There were no musical moments which made you almost jump out of your seat, knowing you were hearing a great hit for the first time, as there have been in most of his successes."
But then that's the way it is with critics. A year later, when Rodgers and Hammerstein presented their next show, Me and Juliet, the critic of the New York Times reported,
Mr. Rodgers has written one of his most melodious scores.
Which he hadn't. Me and Juliet contained some attractive songs, but that just about covers it. The show had one hit, though, a song based on a tango theme written by Rodgers for the television documentary Victory at Sea.
No other love have I, only my love for you. Only the dream we knew. No other love. Watching the night go by, wishing that you could be. Watching the night with me. Into the night I cry, hurry home, come home to me. Set me free, free from doubt and free from longing. Into your arms I'll fly, locked in your arms I'll stay, waiting to hear.
The next musical, presented by Rodgers and Hammerstein, had the shortest run of the seven shows they wrote together. Called Pipe Dream, it was based on Sweet Thursday, the John Steinbeck novel about life in Cannery Row, a raffish section of Monterey, California. It was in a much more salubrious setting that Oscar Hammerstein first met Richard Rodgers.
Well, Dick Rodgers, I met as the kid brother of Morty Rodgers, who was a contemporary of mine at Columbia University. And Dick came around one day to see a matinee of the Varsity Show, in which I was a leading comedian. And that's my first memory of him. A little boy with very dark eyes and in short pants. And that memory stays with me, and I can still see that little boy in Dick. But he has a very worried look on his face. I know that underneath is that little boy.
He had reason to look worried about Pipe Dream because a musical about alcoholics, prostitutes, and other social misfits just wasn't what people expected of Rodgers and Hammerstein. It was simply miscasting. And speaking of miscasting, what dealt a real body blow to Pipe Dream was the Wagnerian soprano Helen Traubel, who played the proprietress of the local house of horizontal refreshment. Now, honestly, does this sound like a madam to you?
When the sun flew in my window and crept in bed with me, I knew that this would be a sweet Thursday. When the wind got confidential and whispered through a tree, I knew that this would be a sweet Thursday. My head was up in the clouds, my heart was flapping its wings. I looked at the sky and wanted to try to do impossible things. What a day it's been for dreaming. My dreams have all come true. And if one I kept for you turns out to be right, it's going to be a sweet Thursday night for me. It's going to be a sweet Thursday night.
When Rodgers and Hammerstein next presented one of their own musicals, it was far more successful. Flower Drum Song wasn't a world beater, but its run was almost twice as long as Me and Juliet's and Pipe Dreams put together.
I'm a girl, and by me that's only great. I am proud that my silhouette is curving, that I walk with a sweet and girlish gait. with my hips kind of swivelly and swervy. I adore being dressed in something frilly. When my date comes to get me at my place, out I go with my Joe or John or Billy, like a filly who is ready for the race. When I have a brand new hairdo with my eyelashes all in curl, I float as the clouds on air do. I enjoy being a girl. The men say I'm cute and funny, and my teeth are on teeth but pearl. I just lap it up like honey. I enjoy being a girl. I flip when the fella sends me flowers. I drool over dresses made of lace. I talk on the telephone for hours with a pound and a half of cream upon my face. I'm strictly a female, female, and my future I hope will be in the home of a brave and free male who'll enjoy being a guy, having a girl like me. When men say I'm sweet as candy, as a round in a dance we whirl, it goes to my head like brandy. I enjoy being a girl. When someone with eyes that smolder says he loves every silken curl that falls on my ivory shoulder, I enjoy being a girl. When I hear a complimentary whistle that greets my bikini by the sea, I turn and I glower and I bristle, but I'm happy to know the whistle's meant for me. I'm strictly a female, female, and my future I hope will be in the home of a brave and free male who'll enjoy being a guy, having a girl.
In 1960, the sad death of Oscar Hammerstein left Rodgers without a partner. Unable to find a suitable replacement, the composer finally decided to try writing his own lyrics. At lunch one day with the playwright Samuel Taylor, Rodgers remarked that he'd love to write a musical for the beautiful singer Diane Carroll. Before the dessert arrived, the two men had mapped out a story, and the show turned out to be called No Strings.
The sweetest sounds I'll ever hear are still inside my head. The kindest words I'll ever know are waiting to be said. The most entrancing sight of all is yet for me to see. And the dearest
to direct and choreograph No Strings, Rodgers chose Joe Layton.
Everybody forgets he's brilliant in his sense of theater and very easy to work with. And the music and the lyrics are really the least of his problems. He knocks them out faster than anybody I've ever seen, you know. And then he puts it aside, then he produces a show. He oversees everything. And yet he gives everybody the respect that he's hired them for. If you're hired to direct, then you're hired to direct, and your last word will go, even though he'll give his opinion. And he's generous, and yet very shrewd. He's a great overseer, and maintains a taste and a style. and likes to know everything, which I think should be. He's nobody's fool.
Nobody's fool indeed. In the mid-1960s, Richard Rodgers became president and producing director of the New York State Theater of Lincoln Center. One of his most successful productions was a revival of Annie Get Your Gun, a show which ended with a tune ideally suited to our finale. Rodgers and Hammerstein, Buddy De Silva, Irving Berlin, American Showman all, we're playing your song.
There's no business like show, business like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing, everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show, people they smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold. Still you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show. Let's go on with the show.
And that's where we leave Michael Craig and the American Showman. The program was written by Dick Osborough and researched by Bill Sullivan. The producer was David Raven Allen. And now we take a look ahead to next week's program with Benny Green.
The writer-producers, a colourful and highly talented bunch. At least one of them, Irving Berlin, was probably a genius of sorts. But for sheer freakish energy of the creative as well as the administrative kind, I wonder if even Berlin was as remarkable as next week's hero. Rodgers and Hammerstein were songwriters who became producers, and we've just heard very briefly how Rodgers further advanced to the status of lyric writer. Berlin was composer, lyricist, producer, publisher. But even that pales before the achievements of George Michael Cohan, who modestly shouted at the top of his voice that he was a composer, lyricist, producer, director, choreographer, playwright, dancer, singer, actor, publicist. He would show them to their seats as well if that helped business. Cohan was perhaps the vainest man who ever trod the broads of Broadway. Unfortunately, for those who tried to dismiss him as a big-mouth upstart, he was at least half as good as he thought he was, and that makes him very good indeed. In fact, he could have claimed authorship of some of the most famous songs ever written.
I've got a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. She's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle went to London just to ride the ponies. I am that Yankee Doodle boy. I'm a Yankee Doodle dandy. Yes, sir, friends. I'm a Yankee Doodle do or die. You know what, too? I'm a real live nephew of my Uncle Sam's. You know why? 'Cause I was born on the 4th of July. And Let me tell you, I've got me a Yankee Doodle sweetheart. Oh, she's my Yankee Doodle joy. Yankee Doodle went to London just to ride the ponies. I am a Yankee Doodle boy.
Then again, even there, Cohan was gilding the lily just a bit to make the publicity seem more colourful. Actually, he was born on July the 3rd, not July the 4th. But what's 24 hours among sycophantic friends? Cohan quarrelled with everyone, feuded with his fellow actors, warred with the unions and other managements, loathed the critics, loved himself, and did everything he possibly could to make everybody else take him at his own evaluation. And there's a contradiction there somewhere. On stage, George Cohan was the personification of sentimental charm. The spunky little Irish-American boy from the wrong side of the tracks who makes good. Off stage, he was the opposite. His enemies used to boil with rage just to hear his name. And in the end, even the greatest performers and writers in America, people like Eddie Cantor and Richard Rodgers, they had to give him the thumbs down. Nobody ever quite bottled the essence of George M. Cohan, though a lot of people tried. But he was so magnetic a man that at least two great performers could be said to have crowned their careers simply by impersonating him. One of these was Joel Grey, who played Cohan in the Broadway musical George M. The other was a Hollywood star who did such an inspired, sympathetic job on Georgie Cohan that one of Cohan's daughters said of that portrayal, it wasn't her father as he really was, but it was her father as he wanted people to think he was. So there you have the enigma of the original song and dance man, George M. Cohan, the Yankee Doodle Boy immortalised first by himself and then a long, long time afterwards by James Cagney.
Give my regards to Broadway. Remember me to Herald Square. Tell all the gang at 42nd Street that I will soon be there. Whisper of how I'm yearning to mingle with that old-time throng. Give my regards to old Broadway and say that I'll be there ere long.
We'll give your